Okay, ready? Where's Marilyn? Okay. You know what I like? Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 22nd, 2012 regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and we discussed several items. The first was we did a public employee performance evaluation of the superintendent, and we'll be continuing that conversation at the next closed session. We discussed anticipated litigation, significant exposure to potential litigation, one case. We had a conference with our labor negotiators, employee organizations CSEA and SEIU, our agency designated representatives, and our district negotiating team and council. And then finally, we discussed student personnel items, consideration of California High School Exit Exam waiver for students, requests for students with disabilities. The board didn't take any action in closed session. Coming back to the board, let's look at approval of minutes. We have four sets of minutes to approve. The first would be April 19th, 2012. Carries 7-0. Let's move on to the minutes of May 1st. Would someone like to make a motion on that?
I'll move approval of the minutes for May 1st.
We have a motion to approve the minutes of May 1st, seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Oops, I'm sorry. We have 6-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to the approval of minutes for the meeting of May 14th, 2012. Would someone like to make a motion about that?
I'll move that we approve the minutes of May 14th, 2012.
Sorry. Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Millar. Any discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Abstain.
We have carries 6-0 with one abstention. Thank you very much. Let's move on to student representatives to the board. Aaron.
Good evening. Today I'll be presenting just some information on the scholarships that we've received for some students. The first of which is sitting behind Mr. Arguena, Ellie Morrison. So I don't see any other ones, so sorry if you're out there. American Legion for 500, Ellie Morrison. The CASCWA 700 for Alicia Duran. The California Retired Teachers Association, 500 again for Ellie Morrison. The California School Employees Association, 500 for Nina Moore. King David's Masonic Lodge, two of them for 2,000, Ellie Morrison and Julio Delgada. Martin Luther King Jr., 1,100 for four of them, and one of them got 1,300, Cindy Cervantes, Alicia Duran, and Julio Delgado for 1,100, Beverly Felmley, and Chris Hernandez for 13. Rotary Monday Club, three for 700, Alicia Duran, Stellan Waldorf, and Vicky Perez. Rotary Tuesday Daybreak, three for 1,000, Cindy Cervantes, Jessica Guzman, and Alicia Duran. And the last one is San Luis Obispo Women's Soccer for 100 to John Castellanos. And we have three that are still pending. The Altruza, one for 500. The Exchange Club, three for 500. And then the Golden Bear, two for 1,000. 24 scholarships, 12 donor organizations, and a total of 2,100 and 100. And yeah, so little school, big bucks. And just a reminder for graduation, that's on June 14th at 1 p.m. in J2. For those of you who didn't read the sign, that is this room. And that's it for me. Thank you. It's at 1 p.m. June 14th.
Great. Thank you very much, Aaron. And speaking of Pacific Beach High School, we have a presentation from our Pacific Beach High School students on Project Citizen. Dr. Prater, who's going to be presenting that one?
I'd like to introduce teacher Jeff Araguena.
Thank you so much. It's great being here. This is year number two. Before we get started, I'd like to introduce last year and this year's lead district coach for this project, Charlotte. So, Charlotte, if you want to come on up here. She'll say a few words, give you a little brief introduction, and then we'll go ahead and get into the project.
All right. Thanks, Mr. A. Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I am Charlotte Lopez Shermer. I am the Congressional District Coordinator for Project Citizen. I live here in San Luis Obispo. Project Citizen is a nationwide nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that promotes civic education in grades 5 through 12. And I had the privilege of coming before you last year also to introduce a group of students from Pacific Beach High. And I think you remember their project was about the district cell phone policy. And so pleased that your board chose to adopt some of the recommendations. And the Project Citizen organization as a whole was so impressed that they invited that group of students to attend the state showcase in San Diego. Unfortunately, it was the same day as their graduation, so they couldn't attend. But their presentation has gone out to many Project Citizen organizers and has really become a model. So they are really to be commended, particularly since this year funding was unfortunately put on hold for Project Citizen, but Mr. A and his group of students have gone
far in advance of where we're at right now. This is an entire paradigm shift in the way that students work with teachers and how teachers work with students in regards to obtaining information to become that much better in the classroom. It's something that when we did the research, which you'll see, school districts just do not incorporate student evaluations into the process. They do use some, you'll see right now, you see data being used, test results, but not the actual evaluations that students are giving to teachers. So this is a total different shift. This is a total different way of thinking. So what these students have done is they've done two things. One, they are going to show you how they've incorporated Data Director, which the district currently uses for multiple different resources, taken that resource, taken Charlotte Danielson's work that we're currently working on in the teacher evaluation meetings or the process, combined the two together, created a rubric, created a short answer summary quiz, not quiz, summary evaluation, and also a Scantron, which makes this whole process simple and efficient for administrators. Because the one thing we didn't want to have happen is have one teacher who has 180 students get 180 different evaluations, and then each administrator have to read those evaluations. It's just too much work. So they've done it in a way that I think you're going to be extremely surprised, and I'm very excited. Please have your pens ready. Take some notes. Ask some questions. Like I said, this is something that's so far different than what we see right now, that it's going to be kind of hard to grasp at first, and that's usually how paradigm shifts work, but I think you're going to enjoy what they have to present. So please wait for questions at the end, and then hammer home. These kids are ready. So I'll go ahead and Stella will present to you the packet, and you can follow along as the PowerPoint presentation goes. If you need an extra copy, we'll get a copy to you. Like I said, this is something where this is a work in progress, just like last year's policy as well. I've put up there for the first slide. Last year it was kind of the same thing in regards to the programs we work with, Center of Civic Education, National Conference of State Legislatures. I've added to that in the future we hope to work with them because, as Charlotte said, we did not get funding this year. So we hope that they, in the future, will get the funding and we can hop back on board and work with them. So kick back, relax, and let these individuals show you what they've done. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Ryan Fiskus.
And I'm Taylor Ames.
And we are going to present to you the problem.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry. Step up to the microphone.
Okay. Hello, my name is Ryan Fiskus.
And I am Taylor Ames.
And we're going to present to you the problem. A problem that we've recognized in San Luis Coastal Unified School District is that students play absolutely no role in the evaluation process for teachers. The current policy is based on an inefficient system where one formal evaluator observes a teacher's performance potentially three times a year and is the lone voice in the entire evaluation process. Meanwhile, students interact with teachers on a daily basis and yet are not to be considered as an added part of any value in the evaluation process.
So, in review, currently students play absolutely no role in the evaluation process, and the current policy is only implemented by one evaluator. A tremendous growth opportunity is being completely overlooked for the teachers. And the facts of the matter are, students witness teachers perform on a daily basis, and the administrators don't.
General misperceptions when considering students as a part of teacher evaluations are students can't assess good teaching. Student ratings or popularity contests or witch hunts for disgruntled students. And teachers just don't want student evaluations, and grades indicate whether teachers are doing their job or not well. Oh, we've done the research, and here are the facts. A number of studies researched indicate the following. Students are in the classroom. Students and faculty offer very similar responses when asked to rank aspects of teaching. Teacher preparation, organization, clarity, and comprehensibility are most important to a teacher's performance. Correctable problems can be identified with the program, and the ultimate goal of evaluations is to improve teaching practices.
The conclusion we've come to is the current teacher evaluation process is inefficient and does not fully promote the professional growth of teachers. The district needs to develop a new policy that incorporates student input in addition to formal administrator evaluation. Students can be an extremely useful resource of knowledge to help paint a broader picture of the teacher's performance and for the evaluator, and make the teacher evaluation process just that much more credible. Ultimately, allowing student input to be included in the evaluation process, the district will help promote the professional growth of our teachers in San Luis Coastal. A new policy is needed that incorporates student input at an agreed-upon level.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cody Dallas, and 3rd through 5th grade and 6th through 12th grade. Student evaluation counts as about 5% of overall the teacher's overall evaluation. Students rate teachers on a scale from 0 to 5 in 7 categories. The 7 categories are caring, control, clarifying, challenge, captivate, conferring, and consolidating. And this is Rate My Teacher. The format is teachers are listed on a public website. The overall rating of the teacher consists of an average of helpfulness and clarity ratings. Any comments left by the students are reviewed by online moderators, and examples are teachers are rated on a scale from 0 to 5 in 4 categories. These the 4 categories are clarity, helpfulness, popularity, and easiness. Also allows users to leave comment and voice opinions. The conclusion is we believe these policies lack substance, offer unclear results, offer no professional development options, allow no student accountability, overall zero credibility, and not effective for improving teaching methods or practices.
You know, and I'm going to ask the public if you'd please either turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate. Thank you very much. I'm going to check mine and make sure too.
Hello, my name is Baden Cortez.
Hi, I'm Kenneth Drake Moore.
And I'm Randy Rinaga.
And we're going to be proposing our public policy. Our policy is based on a two-part evaluation system. One part, a multiple-choice rubric questionnaire that collects data and inputs it into the data collection system known as Data Director. This rubric, it provides administrator with clear results, allows for a conservation of time and resources. It clarifies anomalies that can appear in test scores. and pinpoints areas needed for improvement for teachers, as well as areas where they thrive. It also provides an intense focus of areas for professional development. This rubric is a supportive document for the survey. The second part would be a set of short answer questions based off of the rubric. These short answers will show clear reasoning for the answers given in the questionnaire. They provide substance to those answers, as well as giving a variety of examples. They also allow for more credible explanations and reinforce the critical thinking process. It also allows for a filter process in order to ensure quality responses, and as well as providing students an opportunity to take ownership of their answers. This short answer provides substance for the rubric placement.
So these are our 9 questions. We have developed 9 questions using the 4 domains for the evaluation. So question number 1, which is in domain planning and preparation, how does the teacher show knowledge and understanding of the students and their needs? Question 2 would be, does the teacher provide valid forms of tests and assessments for the students? The next domain is classroom environment, which contains questions 3, 4, and 5. Question 3 is, does the teacher create an environment of respect among the students and themselves in the classroom? Question number 4 is, does the teacher establish a culture for learning, expectations, importance, as well as show student pride in work? And question number 5 is, does the teacher manage behavioral problems effectively in the classroom?
Domain 3 of our public policy is classroom instruction. Question number 6 is, how does the teacher communicate with students? Question number 7 is, how does the teacher engage the students in learning? Domain number 4 is professional responsibilities. Question number 8 is, how does the teacher maintain grades? Question number 9 is, does the teacher show professionalism, which is integrity, ethical conduct, service to students, and decision making?
Some things to note is that the administrator does not have to read every student's short answer response, thus saving time. However, the short answer responses should be overviewed when certain outliers appear after the data director's Scantron results are in. They should also be reviewed when looking for positive information in order to share with colleagues and improve teaching methods. This right here is the framework from which we drew the 4 domains and established our questions. This is a framework for teaching components of professional practice by Charlotte Danielson. Right here is the rubric that students would receive. As you can see, it's a very simple 9x5 grid that clearly labels each question and domain, as well as the qualifier. As an example, we performed a sample survey based on teacher A and teacher B. As you can see, for teacher A, under the first domain, their students think that they performed relatively well, scoring 3s and 4s. This teacher might also be someone who could help share knowledge and ideas with other colleagues in order to further improve their methods. On the other hand, teacher B has a bit more of a spotty response, scoring 2s and 1s primarily in the first domain. This would be someone who needs to work on a few things, according to their students. One thing to note is the student who placed 4s all across the board. This would be an example of one of those anomalies that you would want to use the short answers in order to further develop, as well as decide whether or not this information is valid. From this survey, we have learned that teacher A is very strong in majority of their categories and is a teacher who could help their colleagues in professional development. Their students feel as if the classroom offers a solid environment of mutual respect. However, they do need to work on promoting students to take pride in their work at a higher level. They do manage students' behavioral problems extremely well. As for teacher B, they need to work on improving their skills in a variety of areas. They do maintain a solid, organized grading system, but they should work on creating a better environment of respect. Also, their response to their students' behavioral problems should be looked into.
After this, we can put the results to work. And as you can see, the results offer targeted areas for discussion and improvement between the teacher and the administrator. The students' names remain anonymous to the teacher to prevent bias. The administrator and the teacher work on professional development opportunities to improve the teacher ability in areas suggested. The administrator and the teacher use the information to help provide colleagues with information on how to improve practices.
Good evening, and once again, my name is Aaron Albertson. And today I'll be walking you through the action plan and presenting to you the conclusion. Our action plan is a five-step process, the first of which is where the district distributes evaluations to administrators and board members and conducts an orientation. The second is that the district adopts the Pacific Beach student proposed policy. The third is that the district acknowledges the student evaluation system as a resource in teacher evaluations. The fourth is that the district implements a pilot run at the high school level. Right now, we are focused mainly on high school. Then the fifth is the students receive an orientation on the new procedures regarding student participation in teacher evaluations at the start of the semester. Now, as for the conclusion, like Mr. Aranguena said earlier, going into this project, we all had one major question. How can we get the group of people who see their teachers nearly every day into this evaluation process? Our answer to this question was to form a new policy for the board to see. Through discussion with teachers and students, we were able to create an additional evaluation process. Not only does this allow students to evaluate their teachers with ease, but it also contains questions which will help teachers and administrators by providing information to the teachers and the administrators on how well they are doing and informing them in the areas that they need improvement. It is not meant to attack teachers, as some teachers may be worried about. And we've showed you all of this tonight with our proposed policy, but just seeing this policy is not going to be good enough. In order for all of you and everyone else to see its true potential, it must be tested. It must be tested. And we believe that this evaluation process will improve teachers' performances in the classroom. We strongly recommend that you consider these not changes, but more of an addition. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Okay. We'll go to the board. I'm sure the board has some questions for you. Mrs. Sheffer, I believe you were first.
Works.
And then I have one other question, and that is that I was looking at, I would think that you would have, as part of your orientation, sort of the common definitions for some of the language, such as a common definition of integrity and ethical conduct and some of the vocabulary that's used to make sure that all students are working from a common definition?
Yeah, we'll most likely make it more simple worded if we go down to the other levels. And, yeah, we can edit it and fix it a little bit more if it needs to be.
Or just have a sort of glossary of terms or what, so that everyone has a common understanding of everyone's working from the same understanding of the terminology you're using, because they're great it's wonderful terminology as long as everyone is using the same understanding of the vocabulary you've inserted into this.
Now, were you wondering if we wanted to eventually implement this or get this implemented into grades below high school?
Mm-hmm. Eventually?
I think the lowest this might go is middle school, because I don't think you want seven-year-olds and whatnot, you know, saying how they feel about their teachers. There may be a lot of ineffective comments.
Well, yeah, that may be resorted to a witch hunt.
Different rubrics.
I mean, nothing against seven-year-olds in the audience, but
we need it a little bit more credible than a young person's view that doesn't exactly understand the full aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. First of all, when you handed this out, it's a heavy document. It's got a lot of good information in it, and I have to tell you, I was a little scared that we were going to be here for a while. So I want to compliment you on your use of PowerPoint and your ability to digest this and still leave me with information that I need. So
thank you.
Major congratulations on that. I also want to know which teacher's turning in stuff with typos in it, as there's a comment in here.
That would be Mr. Arnguin.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, because I did notice that as a negative comment.
That would be what we would score him with a 1 on.
Okay. So typing lessons for staff. The real question I have is, at one point in here you have documents with students' names on them, and I'm wondering if you've thought that through.
Just the administrators would be the only ones who would see the students' names. Okay. But when the administrator takes it down and shows the teacher, the names will be either white-outed or blanked out. The teachers won't be seeing it.
Okay. So when you talked among yourselves, was that something that you were comfortable with, having your names on there, or was there any discussion about we ought to keep this confidential right from the start?
We discussed it, and we decided, yes, it should be on the document somewhere, mainly for the administrators, so that the outliers, as Baden mentioned, could be identified with troublemaking students. But it just one of the outliers. And teachers shouldn't see them because of the potential bias that there is.
Okay. So when they're done, these will all be burned and okay.
Burned and shredded, yes.
Yeah. Three times.
And then just my last question is, this seems to be, how do I put this? When I was in high school, I would have taken this as a great advantage to sort of take it to maybe not be as honest as I would, but to take some shots at some teachers. Do you have some way? Is that what you're talking about, the outliers, or?
Yes, it's we're operating under the idea that most of us are honest, in at least in these. And the short answers do, again, provide opportunities to elaborate. You know,
they cut you off.
With the when you do see those anomalies, you go, I wonder why this student thinks so consistently about this teacher. And then that's when you go into the more in-depth short answers and say, and determine whether or not that it is indeed a valid opinion.
You can't just say, oh, I don't like this teacher because he sent me out of class when I wrote on my arm. You have to give examples when you answer the questions.
Okay, and so you're balancing the declarative statements with the bubble, and it sounds like you're going to use those as checks and balances.
Yes.
Do I understand that?
Sorry. This one time every semester, is that what we agreed upon?
Yeah.
One time every semester, there'd be an orientation for newer students, and at the end of the semester, there'd be the forms handed out. Everyone would get over and read the rubric and then fill out their Scantron and their short answer. So then the teachers can get a better understanding of what their students need from them.
Good.
And we didn't want this all in one day, because all of us who take STAR testing and all of those tests, we know that by the end of the teacher, the last teacher may get a lot of ones and twos.
Yeah,
we don't want that to happen.
No. And I like the short answer part. Now, is part of your indoctrination on the rubric at the beginning of the semester or trimester going to be that if you score a 1 or a 4, then you need to be thinking about providing a short answer to kind of justify that? Is that the thinking?
Sure.
Yes. Okay. You need to provide a short answer for every single question.
Okay.
The reason why we have that is so that there is no possible way that they can lie or make it seem like the teacher isn't doing their job when they are.
And this isn't about finding bad teachers. It's about finding areas that teachers excel at or teachers don't, and improving the general learning atmosphere. I mean, like we said, it's not a witch hunt. It's not about finding bad teachers and ousting them.
Good. Well, I think the fact that 2 years in a row, you guys, your school has brought to this board really provocative projects, though in a cell phone thing was incredible. Hopefully, Teach Foundation will be able to honor some grant requests to keep this going, and I'd like to see us do something with this work you've done, and I agree with Catherine, you've convinced me as well. Some of the hidden jewels of this school district, Pacific Beach. Thanks very much.
Well, I just want to commend, agree with most of what has been said here, and to commend you on your presentation. It was excellent. And I'm impressed with the rubric and also with the idea of the follow-up questions, so short answer questions. So well done.
Thank you.
Great. And again, just on behalf of the board, we really want to thank you for all of your efforts. We know you guys put a lot of work into this. We know it's also tough sometimes to come up and make a presentation in front of the board and probably 100 people behind you, but you really made yourselves and you made PB proud. So I want to thank you again on behalf of the board.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Then.
Okay, let's move on then to our next agenda item, which is Employees of the Year. Dr. Prater, who's going to be making that presentation? It looks like Mr. Pinkerton.
Thank you, board. Got it. Thank you. This is another great time, with the budget cuts and the other issues that we have to face. We also have some happy times. At the end of the year, we get to celebrate some of our Employees of the Year. At our last meeting, we were fortunate enough to have the teacher representatives for the Teacher of the Year candidates, and as well as our Teacher of the Year. And tonight, we have the opportunity to recognize our other four Employees of the Year. The categories are physical support employee, clerical employee, school support employee, and administrator/management. And so basically, we send these nomination forms out to all members of our school community, ask for nominations, and then we have a group of representatives from all of the different unions, as well as the administration and confidential, and we get together and we select one representative from each of the groups. And so to start us off tonight, physical support employee of the year, and this gentleman happens to be at the hospital right as we speak. His wife is delivering a baby, hopefully very soon, but I will have Mr. Leslie O'Connor, the principal at San Luis High School, come up and speak on his behalf, and our physical support employee of the year is Mr. Rick Stimson.
I'm honored to be here this evening and represent Rick. Rick's been an employee of San Luis Coastal for over 10 years. He's energetic, he's personable, very professional, he has a can-do attitude, and he's always willing to go that extra mile for staff and students at San Luis High. He's a worthy recipient of the award, and as Ryan mentioned, him and his wife are currently at the hospital in labor. Knowing Rick, he's probably trying to deliver the baby himself. But he's that kind of guy. And he's wonderful to work with. He's always got a smile on his face, and he will do anything for us at San Luis High.
Performance on a regular basis.
And they are a living proof that performance can be improved with student feedback. So thank you. Kelly is the receptionist for the adult school, and we have about 3,500 students, so she's the point person. Everybody calls, everybody walks in the door. Kelly's the person. But Kelly is the employee of the year because she just does whatever it takes to get the job done. Summer school starts. We find ourselves two algebra books short. She calls school A. They say, oh, we don't have any books. She calls school B. Nobody answers the phone because it's the end of June. She grabs the keys, jumps in her truck, drives out there, gets into the book room. Some of the book rooms look like the Smithsonian basement. She finds two books. She jumps in her truck. She drives back. She delivers the two books and doesn't even break a sweat. Makes it look like, oh, just another day. She does whatever it takes to get the job done. But while I'm here on national TV, I just want to clarify one little thing. People come to our office and they look at our holiday decorations and they're just overwhelmed. They go, wow, this is great. But in a few people, I see that little question of doubt in their mind. And they say, boy, they must not be very busy in this office if they have time to make this look like Santa's workshop. So I just want to clarify. We leave on Friday. The office looks like every day. We come back on Monday and surprise, Kelly has been there on the weekend, on her own time, making the place look like the destination for the Easter Bunny, the Halloween enchantment land, Santa's workshop, Valentine, everybody's in love. We go from one holiday to another. I just tell her when she's there all alone on the weekend and she's on that giant ladder, be very careful. Thank you, Kelly.
All right, next up, if I can have Diane Frost from Laguna Middle School come forward. And our school support employee of the year is Ms. Andrea Blanco.
Thank you. Andrea Blanco has been working with English learners in San Luis Coastal for 17 years. She's passionate about the success of these students and spends countless hours helping with their understanding of the English language. And she truly thinks outside the box when we're talking about instruction and providing support for these students. But I do want you to know that as she's standing up here, she's not a woman who loves the spotlight. And she definitely wants you to know that she is the member of a very dynamic team at Laguna Middle School. Our EL team is fabulous. Kathy Ahern, Relda Thomas, Colleen Spafford. She works with Barbara Adler and Taylor Kern, all wonderful support for our students. Things that Andrea and the team have brought to our school. In an effort to create a college-going atmosphere, Andrea and her team have combined with Cal Poly with the SHEP program, which is the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers. Our students are invited to Cal Poly. They work with engineering students. They work in the science labs. They work on their Nobel Prizes and their mousetrap cards. It's a wonderful opportunity for them. Andrea also coordinates our EL celebrations in December and in June. It's a wonderful celebrations for our families. And she spends countless hours putting together gifts so that every child and every sibling is honored at that event. Before our EL students are released for summer, Andrea and the certificated staff she works with put together reading and writing assignments for our students and then spend some of their summer hours making sure that these children are moving forward. While Andrea's job title is bilingual aid, she is so much more than that. She's a teacher, a coach, a counselor, and an advocate for all of our students. We believe that she's an inspirational employee and an outstanding selection for Student Support Employee of the Year. Miss Andrea Blanco.
I can attest to the fact that she doesn't like celebrations on her honor when we went to the class to recognize her. But we do it anyways. Next up, if I can have Dr. Prater come forward, and we are going to recognize our Administrator of the Year, and that is Mr. Doug Jennison.
Mr. Jennison, empathy, experience, humility, awareness, and a love for all students as if they were his own. Through the eyes of a teacher, Mr. Jennison represents compassion, a focus on the whole child, belief that all students can learn, support, and a skillful navigator at the helm. Through the eyes of a superintendent, Mr. Jennison represents responsibility, integrity, duty, skillful leadership, and devotion to the term that all truly does mean all. And finally, through the eyes of society, Mr. Jennison represents public education at its very best. Thank you.
Board is going to take a 10-minute recess. We're going to reconvene at 8 o'clock. We have some treats in the back to help us celebrate our Employees of the Year, so please feel free to take some of those, and we'll reconvene in 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Oops, sorry about that. Okay. So we'll begin again, and I'd like to now go to correspondence. And the board did receive a letter from the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association asking it to review how services are provided with students for students with disabilities who are actually non-San Luis Coastal Unified students and how the impacts of them in our special education and other campuses is. Thank you. Let's move on to public comment. Now, in this portion of public comment, this is for items typically that are not on the agenda right now. So is there anybody that would like to address the board on an item that is not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. And I'm going to move to item number 7.01, status of the state budget and the implications of the governor's May revision. Dr. Prater and Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this point in time, the issues at the state continue to evolve. Most of the focus has been on the governor's initiative and the competing PTA-backed Molly Munger initiative. And there hasn't been much beyond the May revise that I think we talked about last time. And they're kind of waiting to see what the measurement of the revenues are going to be and if there's going to be any alternatives presented by the governor or the legislature to the educational issues and cuts that are upcoming.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Mr. Buckman.
I don't necessarily. Well, I do have a question. Mr. Miller, as I understand, I'm going to hold this question. Okay, sorry. Thank you very much for your update.
Thank you. Appreciate your question. You're welcome.
Okay. We're going to move on now to item number 8.01. This is a public hearing on utilizing the flexibility authorized by SB X3-4 related to categorical program funding. Mrs. Lang.
Thank you. As you may recall, when the state passed SB X3-4, one of the requirements was to hold a public hearing to allow the public to comment on the proposed use of the flexible resources. Since SB X3-4 passed, the state has extended the authorization of the flexible funds until 2014-15. And most recently, AB 189 was passed, which requires the public hearing and board discussion to be held prior to the meeting where we adopt the budget. And also requires the board to approve the closure of any of the flexible resources. At this time, we're not planning on closing any of the flexible resources. You have a list of the state numbers and the flexible resource codes that we're using to track these resources attached to this.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing on this item, on use of flexible funds, SB X3-4. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on item number 8.01. We'll move to item 9.01, approval to utilize flexible
60. It supports elementary and secondary music and choir to the tune of $99,000.
And so by passing this, we're incorporating that into the general fund.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
The fundamental issue with these categorical funds is that they went from a restricted program to an unrestricted program with the stipulation that we explained to the board and the public that what we're using them for and what kind of income we get from them still from the state. And this money is coming and we use it for this, we attempt to use it for the specific purpose it was originally intended. But ultimately, it's backfilling the encroachments in these particular programs.
Any other questions from board members? Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 9.02, the budget development, action on superintendent's recommendations. This is our second reading. Dr. Prater.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, Board. I want to thank you for all your questions that you've directed my way. I want to, before I enter into my final conversation prior to giving you the floor, I'd just like to bring us back into context. So we began this process back in January. We have gone all the way through this process as of last board meeting. We weighed in on the first reading, and this evening represents a second reading and possibly your consideration for approval as we complete this decision on our budget for next year. During last board meeting, you asked specific questions that you needed clarification on. So upon receiving those questions, I met with my team, and we then spent a great deal of time. I want to give credit to our superintendent, Rick Robinette. He spent a tremendous amount of energy and time collecting information from our directors and from a variety of members of our team to define those questions, answer those questions, and to put more clarity to it. So I wanted to let you know that since the completion of those questions, I sent out the document, and it is on our website. I emailed it to all of our employees as well as the media so they could see exactly what it is I'm proposing, with the questions hopefully answered to your satisfaction. In addition to that, we used our school messenger system to notify all parents in our community last evening about urging them to get involved, to read the document, and I let them know that our board meetings are the first and third of every month. So I heard the concerns shared. I've tried very hard to put it out there as best that I can. Keep in mind that whenever the task of reducing $4 to $5 million in an organization like ours, it's going to be painful. There's no one that escapes this. And so my task is a difficult one. However, ultimately the board makes the final decision. So I want to bring you as well as everyone into how that was made. Okay. Thank you. And so I want to start by examining our core values, because I want you to understand how I came to my recommendation. So the core values really came from many years ago when the board sat down and said, what's most important to our organization? We have always had, for the last 20 or some odd years, a strategic plan. We'd adopted a revised strategic plan called the Strategic Plan Initiatives for Student Success last year. So these have now become part of the board's core value, where all means all. The second core value that has been defined by the board is a commitment to employee workforce wherever possible. After that, the fifth priority is to maintain focus on student achievement and to make all our decisions using data to drive us. So I want to talk real briefly about the history of our strategic planning, and this was derived from Mr. Robinette and vetted by a few people, so it's fairly accurate. So from 1989 to 2000, we had Dr. Denton as our superintendent in San Luis Coastal. His strategic plan involved 15 focus groups or focus areas. And some of those had to do with facilities, had to do with programs that we see in place today, counseling, reading recovery is one of note. And so within that 11-year span, much was accomplished. When Dr. Denton left and Dr. Ladd came, he was introduced to the PG&E bankruptcy, at which point San Luis Coastal had to go from revenue to a $10 million hole. And in, during that time, some of you on the board remember this, during that time, three schools were closed. A whole lot of conversations occurred that were very difficult conversations in this community. And it was during that time, from 2000-2004, that Dr. Ladd and the board built in processes to bring back programs when the money came back. And those processes or those protocols led the way. Now, I want to remind the board that during this time, 2000-2004, it was during that time that neighboring districts experienced somewhat of a windfall. So San Luis Coastal was closing schools and laying off up to 80 employees, while neighboring districts were giving double-digit salary increases. So let's not forget that piece in our history. Then came Dr. Valentine. And during Dr. Valentine, you'll see a little sun there. And that was our little attempt to say those were some good times, because at that point, the state experienced some significant enhancements in revenues with the dot-com industry. And during that time, the state did a very interesting thing. What they did was they created specific, restricted, categorical programs, which tied the hands of school boards throughout the state. And they said, this is what you must spend the money on. And they were very specific. The last board item you approved was to approve flexibility. Well, before, those were highly restricted categorical programs, that so a whole lot of money came into the district. So using the processes and protocols developed, the tiered processes and protocols developed by Dr. Ladd, Dr. Valentine created a strategic plan that brought back programs in a tiered fashion. And it's my understanding that during this time, it was clearly delineated, and this has been sent out to all employees and to the media, it was clearly delineated that there were certain things that should be considered as our savings fund, our revenue sunshine fund, that when the money's there, we could do those things. But when the money goes away, we need to be prepared to manage it. And in that conversation, or in that conversation with the board, it was identified what some of those programs would be. And some of those recommendations you'll see in my final proposal. So then came my superintendency, and in that we have, we are now experiencing what I see as a potential revisiting of some of the financial economic turmoil that was experienced a decade ago. And so hopefully it will stabilize. But given the core values of the board and given the priorities that you gave me, we created a process that brought us to focusing on student achievement, focusing on all the students as best that we can. And from that, and you're not going to be able to read this, which is why I put it in a packet in front of you and for the audience, this represents my final recommendation to you. And now I want you to know that this isn't reflective of everyone's interests, and I recognize that. I don't like any of this, to be quite honest with you. I really don't. And I know you don't either. But I believe that this represents a strong process. It represents a very complex set of priority at our highest need sites. Those are our Title I schools, where we can support our English learners that may fall through the cracks otherwise. So from that, my final recommendation is a $4.8 million reduction. All the other areas that I recommended previously to you have remained the same. I understand you may want to weigh in on it and ask questions. So at this point, I would like to hand it off to the board, ask if there are any questions of me, and then I will sit down and let you weigh in.
Thank you. Mrs. Holmes, I know we have a number of speakers this evening. Can you tell me how many people have filled requests to speak this evening?
I believe the total is 16.
Okay. So we.
Mr. Buckman has them there. There are 11 indicating an interest in the EL program, and the other five are related to nursing, music, and one other topic.
Okay. As the board knows, and I'm just going to bring this to the public's attention, our board bylaws state that the total amount of time for public input on each item would be 20 minutes, with a 3-minute speaker limit. Last time we took a lot of public input, and I appreciate the public input that we took, and I think everybody heard loud and clear that there were a group of people strongly supporting primary music. The meeting went very late. And my concern was that we didn't get a chance to deliberate on the superintendent's recommendations that we're ultimately going to have to act on. I'm not suggesting that we not listen to everyone, but what my recommendation as the board president would be is that we limit public comment to the people that have already made a request, and that we limit the time to 2 minutes per person so that we have enough time to deliberate this. And I need to see if there's a consensus from the board on that. Is that something that okay. So the board is going to take public comment from everybody who has filled out a yellow form. We're going to ask that you limit your comments to 2 minutes, please. We're also going to ask that if you spoke before, that you please give your spot to another person. And then finally, if somebody else has said what you believe, if you could just indicate that to us, that's fine. We listen absolutely clearly and closely to everything that you say, and we take that into consideration. Again, I'm just going to also remind everybody that the board will not comment on what the public tells us. We're going to listen. That's our job. When we're done with public comment at this time, I will close the public comment, and then we'll bring it back to the board for discussion and possibly action this evening. Okay?
And Chris, if I can, in an effort to get us all out of here a little sooner, I'm going to be calling out 3 speakers, and if you could line up, I think it'll help move things along a little more quickly.
Right. And then the other thing we've done is we have a timer that will give you kind of a visual prompt for how long you should go. So you'll see when your time is approaching. And again, I will remind people when the 2 minutes is up. So Mr. Buckman, would you like to start? I'm sorry, Mrs. Roger.
I wonder if you would consider telling the public that if people have not signed up to speak but share the feelings of the speaker, they could indicate that to us by raising their hand?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, perhaps right at the outset, let's find out if we could, by a show of hands, who is here to speak to us or to be concerned about the English language part of the document? Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Who's here to speak to us about music instruction? Okay. How about special education? Thank you. And the nursing? Great. Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Buckman, shall we begin?
I have one other. Some of you went to the same school I did, so our handwritings are very similar, which means they're going to be a little hard for me to read, so I apologize for any mistakes that I make in pronouncing your names.
About how hard they're working. With less support, the stress will increase. Thank you.
Thank you, Naomi.
Sharon Jeske, followed by Melody Fleming, followed by Mary Parker.
I'm here to represent, I'm Sharon Jeske. I'm here to represent our district's music teachers who are busy giving concerts tonight. The proposed cut represents less than 1% of the budget, yet it proposes to cut half of the elementary music program. I just wanted to tell you some implications that I don't think everybody's really getting, and we didn't really talk about it last meeting, was that 3 years ago we began a project to improve our choir and band program, something that would boost our participation at the middle school and high school. And that project was to put sixth grade band and choir into the school day. Before that, it was all after school. We didn't have a choir program. Now we do. And our band program and the elementary program was only before and after school, which isn't equal access to that curriculum. It's only for kids that can get a ride. And there was no sequential articulation between fourth grade instrument when you're doing a recorder to fifth to sixth to the opportunity to do it in junior high and then into high school. Same with choir. There was no articulation each year. So we've now finally just got all the elementary schools on that program where the kids in sixth grade get to choose band or choir for 1 hour a week in the school day. If we make these cuts, that program won't happen. It will be gone because we can't run that program with two elementary music teachers. We can only run it with three or four. I don't know if we can do it with three, but I know we can't do it with two, because they have to go around to each school together to teach that choir and band class to each school. It's just not possible. So we've just now blown out all the sixth grade band and choir program that we just put in and is working very well. We're getting more students into our programs. You've all noticed that there's been an increase, so I'm hoping that doesn't go away.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Jeske.
Thanks.
Melody Fleming, followed by Mary Parker, followed by Linda Hogeboom.
Hi, my name is Melody Fleming. Thanks so much again for listening to the public. Although, personally, I'm in disagreement with the proposed cuts to primary music, I also acknowledge that sometimes difficult and unpopular decisions must be made, so I can appreciate that. Anticipating the public criticism you'll likely face in this decision, I'd like to suggest that if you can answer these two questions, you'd at least begin to address the concerns at the heart of this issue for many people. The first question is, what strategies for accountability and assessment have the board and Dr. Prater developed regarding the effective delivery of standards-based music instruction in primary classrooms? Given that every teacher deals with competing curricular priorities differently, how will you assess and ensure that music content standards are actually being taught to every student in every classroom? The second question is, the board mentioned that the embedded music approach is strongly supported by the elementary principals, but nothing was mentioned about feedback from the primary teachers who would be implementing it. How will you effectively gain the buy-in and commitment from these teachers, and what kind of professional development support will be available to those who might need to develop their own music content knowledge a little more in order to effectively teach music as a standalone subject? These two questions really get to the bottom line. Will primary students still have access to quality standards-based music education in the context of this new delivery method? If this is the direction we're headed, I'd encourage you to give the approach a greater degree of credibility by clearly outlining and making public your exact plans for successful implementation and ongoing assessment to demonstrate that this approach really does work and show that we're not asking the impossible of teachers or shortchanging our students of music instruction. Thank you.
Thank you, Melody.
Next would Excuse me. Next would be Mary Parker, followed by Linda Hogaboom, followed by Maria Hernandez. And my suggestion is that you come and stand in line in the center column, center aisle, and things will go much faster. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Mary Parker. I am an RN. I worked at Cuesta College for 37 years as in the Nursing and Allied Health Department and the last 18 years as Director of Nursing. I understand that you have really very painful cuts, but I do need to address the superintendent's programmatic analysis of nursing services does not reflect accurately the scope of practice for an LVN. Larger districts very well may be using LVNs more, but they also have not only for RNs, but also for LVNs. One of the core values is to support the strategic plan initiatives for student success. Healthy students have a much higher opportunity for academic success, less absences. A serious mistake in... Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Parker.
Next is Linda Hogaboom, followed by Maria Hernandez, followed by Juan Rivera.
Good evening. I'm Linda Hogaboom. I'm school nurse with Lucia Marr Unified, and I want to respond to the board report, especially the fourth paragraph under nursing services. In that paragraph, it states that your current school health service levels can be maintained with elimination of one full-time credentialed school nurse and utilization of the LVN position. It goes on to state that there is absolutely no compromise to health services through the recommendation. When your district assumed responsibility of the county office program, a thorough analysis of support services was conducted. The addition of a full-time school nurse was a result of that thorough analysis. Nothing has changed since that decision was made. If anything, it has become more complex. A typical day at a school site may include the following requests for nursing services. Conduct a health assessment for initial IEP, train staff to administer medication, screen a newly enrolled student for vision and hearing, consult with a pediatrician to clarify medical orders and discuss a student's health care, supervise LVN and other staff who provide specialized health care procedures, write and implement a diabetic health care plan, participate in an SST or IEP in developing a student plan, meet with a parent to discuss a child's health concerns and formulate an action plan. An LVN cannot provide any of these services. Within a school system, the appropriate correlation with an LVN is that of an instructional assistant. Children with special needs often require additional staffing. When IAs are added, it does not lessen the caseload or responsibility of the teacher or school psychologist. I urge you to keep the staffing as it is.
Thank you very much, Linda.
The next speakers will be Maria Hernandez, Juan Rivera, and Julio Mora.
Mi nombre es Maria Hernandez. Muchas gracias por estar aquí. Bueno, solo quiero pedirles, por favor.
My name is Maria Hernandez. Very thank you for being here. I just want to ask you, please.
Que no recorten el presupuesto para el distrito, ya que pienso que la educación para nuestros hijos.
That please do not cut the budget for the district, that I believe the education for our children.
Es muy importante porque ellos son el futuro de este país.
It's very important because they are the future of our country.
Y que en cualquier recorte de fondo le están quitando la oportunidad de ser mejores.
And that any cut of budgets, you're cutting the opportunity for them to get better.
Estudiantes y mejores profesionistas.
To be better students and to be very better professionals.
Yes. Especialmente a los estudiantes que su primer idioma es español.
Specifically to students whose first language is Spanish.
Que por lo contrario creo que necesitamos más apoyo.
So, in contrary, they do need more support.
Más maestras que hablen dos idiomas.
And more teachers that speak two languages.
Para que nuestros hijos sean mejores estudiantes y mejores personas en este país.
So our students, children can be better students and better people in this country.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker will be Juan Rivera, followed by Julio Mora and Paulo Gomez.
Buenas noches.
Good evening.
Gracias a los representantes aquí de esta mesa directiva.
Thank you here for the board members of this table.
Yo vengo por lo mismo. También soy padre representante de la Escuela Monarch.
I'm also coming for the same thing. I'm a representative parent from the school.
También venimos para
representatives of DELEC.
Y siempre estamos viendo los problemas o las cosas que pasan aquí.
And we're always seeing the problems and
y es muy
that
importante
here.
Ahorita la presencia de todos los padres que están aquí.
And it's very important the presence of all parents who are here.
Gracias a ustedes también por escuchar nuestras sugerencias.
Thank you also for listening to our suggestions.
Lo más importante es que queremos que nuestros hijos sigan estudiando.
The most important thing is we want our children to keep on studying.
Con la ayuda de los profesores especiales.
With the help of special professors.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Our next speaker will be Julio Mora.
Buenas noches.
Good evening.
Mi nombre es Julio Mora.
I'm Julio Mora.
Ya hablé la vez pasada y sigo hablando y seguiré hablando por nuestros estudiantes. Soy un padre preocupado.
I talked last time. I will continue talking. I'm a very worried parent.
Ya lo había manifestado y lo seguiré manifestando y creo que es una preocupación de todos nosotros.
I will continue with this preoccupation. It's a preoccupation of everybody.
Dos cosas quiero decir.
There's two things I want to say.
El recurso de los estudiantes aprendices de inglés que no se toque de la manera que se está amenazando.
I don't want the resources that are for EL students to be touched the way that you are demanding.
Estos muchachos, estos estudiantes, necesitan como un alimento el aprender y saber el inglés.
These students need like alimento, food, nutrition to get the English teaching. Sorry.
Esa es una. La segunda, tengo un hijo estudiando música en la escuela High School de Morro Bay.
I have a child studying music in Morro Bay High School.
Me recomendó muchísimo porque está en un concierto en Cal Poly. Me recomendó muchísimo que les planteara de que tomen en cuenta las recomendaciones que hicieron la vez pasada y que hoy nuevamente se están haciendo. Por favor, se los estamos pidiendo.
He told me and asked me to make a very strong recommendation that was done before and is also being done now about the music program.
Tenemos confianza, señor presidente y miembros del board, que van a aplicar su mejor conocimiento.
We are confident that you will apply your best knowledge to the situation.
Thank you very much.
Next three speakers, Paulo Gomez, Eric Cruz, Francisco Carvarian.
Hi, my name is Paula Gomez. I'm in third grade at Del Mar Elementary School. I'm asking you to not cut the EL program. My little cousin Ruth is in the EL kindergarten class, and my cousin Joshua is in the EL homework work Club. I'm the leader of the Del Mar Radio Show. Last year, my sister Genesis was president of the Del Mar School. I want to be president, too, when I'm in sixth grade. The EL program has helped our family to have successes in school. Most of all, my family has helped me. My mom came here to give us a good education. She worked so hard to support us. I hope you will support us, too.
Thank you very much, Paulo.
The next three speakers would be Eric Cruz, Francisco Carabaran, and Lorenzo Torres.
Hi, my name is Eric, just like the superintendent. I am here to ask, please don't take money from EL. EL helps us in many different ways. Mrs. C comes into our class to help us, and instead of taking money away from our school, give more teachers to help in homework club. And I like when my teacher and Mr. Whiteson, Mrs. C work together. That helps us understand school better.
Great. Thank you very much, Eric. Is that it? Thank you very much.
Our next three speakers will be Francisco Carabaran.
Carabaran, yes. Good evening, everybody. My name is Francisco. Really improve our kids, you know, and I really see like the response of the issue of the cutting, you cutting from us, and like you have to board like really the problem. Like we are really big problem here, because it's not the same equality for everybody. Yes, I can see that. You know, the education is for everybody like equally, and I just feels like at one point like all these 2 months that happened nothing. The only answer that we got, like, taking money for the program for EL. And I think it's very, well, I'm very concerned, you know, because the future, they're the future. Our kids are the future for this country. You know, like, a lot of, for the adult school, you know, we have to understand, we have to give it a chance to the kids, because they're coming up. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much, okay. Mr. Carabaran.
Our next three speakers will be Lorenzo Torres, Catherine Gomez, and Jose David Marcial.
Good evening, members of the board and everyone else. My name is Lorenzo Torres, and I spoke to you guys last time in Spanish. I give you the message. And as a father of the EL students, I worry about my kids' education. And I'm not against a change. I hear there's a change, and I stay almost into the last, the last meeting, and I hear other comments like, "What change?" I'm not against a change. We got a good group of intelligent people here, and I think we can make a good change. But why the cut? Why the takeaway? I think we need those teachers in there because those teachers are not only our kids' teachers. I see those teachers as a bridge with the parents, with the Hispanic community, because a lot of our families, they see those teachers as our only way to get a good communication for their kids between the schools, just because of the lack of communication. I know it's. You probably feel that way last time I was here, and I give you the message in Spanish, and so that's how our families feel when they go to school and they don't speak English, and that's all they get. I think that's all I got for you guys, and thank you so much. Thank you for listening, and just think about. This is our kids' future, and let's work together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Torres.
The next three speakers will be Catherine Gomez, Jose David Marcial, and Gama Martinez.
Hi, my name is Catherine Gomez. I am a student at Laguna Middle School, and I went to Hawthorne Elementary School. I would like to talk about 2 points. One, about the importance of EL students, EL teachers like Jill Nuno, and two, more resources to support students' knowledge and primary language. At Hawthorne Elementary, Jill Nuno helped me throughout my years there. I was an EL student up until the end of fifth grade. Jill Nuno helped me succeed. I received awards for my academics and was honored to receive the Mary LaPlante Award. Miss Nuno was there to support me. She always kept in touch with my mom. I think that our district needs more resources for our EL students. For example, I recently just did a report on whether ESL students should be able to take their STAR test in their most dominant language. If we really want to find out what our ESL students know, then I suggest testing them in their primary language and putting more resources to this. Thank you for your consideration and support.
Thank you.
Okay, following Catherine, the next three speakers will be Jose Marcial, Gama Martinez, and last would be Francisco Cruz.
Hi, my name is Jose. I am here to represent EL. I don't mean to brag, but I learned English in half of a year, and nothing would be possible if EL wouldn't exist. In my opinion, you are doing the wrong thing by cutting resources from EL. My little cousin Mariana got an award for writing, and our dreams are to be an important person in the U.S. But without our resources, that is impossible. So please don't crush our dreams and save EL.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me just introduce you. Camagar Martinez.
Good morning. I'm Gama Martinez, sixth grader from...
We need to invest in those kids because they're going to be the people of the future, you know. They're going to be the future doctors, teachers, superintendents. So we got to see what kind of superintendents you're going to have, you know. These are the kids that you're going to take the money away from. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cruz. Thank you. That's all the public comment we have on this item. We'll bring it back to the board. I would ask that, I know there's a temptation to go ahead and make a motion right now, but I think it would be helpful if the board would do this, to let everybody on the board speak, and then we'll go ahead and see how it goes. So who would like to go first? You guys. Would somebody like to lead off? Catherine?
I would like to thank everyone who spoke tonight. Thank you for your comments. It's very helpful to us. And I'd also like to thank the administration for putting together such an excellent narrative to go along with explaining this. As I hear everyone speaking, I realize how important it is to us to communicate for us, to communicate to the public the reasons for each of these cuts and also what they actually mean and how they will affect your children. And I hope we'll have a chance to use this forum to clarify that a little bit more in terms of the some of the EL cuts. But I'd like to actually start with EL and ask you if you could comment on that. I was very grateful, and thank you very much for the for making some adjustments to the cuts that were previously proposed in the EL area. And so if I understand what you proposed tonight, Dr. Prater, you have cut again in half your original cut from that program. Perhaps you could explain and help us all understand what that will look like in the classroom.
Well, I too appreciate the comments. It's a complex problem that is difficult to explain because it does appear that we are going in the wrong direction. In our strategic plan initiatives, our first priority are the very students that we're impacting. So I understand that, But here's my response, and I'll try to make this as strongly as I can. I believe that our current model, where we have EL specialists, though I understand it's often the conduit to our English learning community, I also believe that it has become somewhat of an academic crutch where we have not really truly maximized our potential in the classroom, the primary classroom. I really believe strongly this isn't putting more burden on the classroom teacher. It's actually part of the solution. I really believe that even if money wasn't an issue, if money was not an issue, I still would be here saying the same thing. And the reason I'm saying that is I believe the real success story is when we come together as a collective team where all of us become English learner instructors, the whole organization. Right now, my worry is that some have relegated that responsibility to someone else outside of the classroom. I do know what I'm talking about here, and I really have seen it work. Now, you asked me what impact this will have, and what I have proposed, in effect, brings back a very similar amount of resources that we've dedicated to EL programs all the way. We're not eliminating EL programs per se. We're restructuring it. We're changing and questioning how we do it. This extra $210,000, I believe, will get us there. It gives us some flexibility. In our district, we have 9 elementary schools and 9 different EL models to support our students, from the non-English speaking students to our orally proficient students ready to exit. So I believe we need to examine what it is we do. The conversations must include classroom teachers. The solution set belongs with all of us, not with just specialists. I am not proposing we eliminate specialists per se. What I am saying is that we need to get around a table and examine how we're going to care for all of our students, and especially the students that I believe will not notice a difference are going to be our English learners ones. Our students need to be owned by all of us. And that starts in the classroom where students spend their days. And right now, I don't see it. I don't see it. Because of our wealth and prosperity in this district, we've inadvertently created a model, in my opinion. Some people might disagree. This is my professional opinion. We're actually not benefiting our English learners to the degree that we should and could. And that's my response. And I need more time to get people around a table with me to talk about it, because we're doing so much all at the same time. For me, the $210,000, if you wish to examine to provide more to that pool, I would be in favor of that, because I don't know exactly what this will involve, but I do believe we can get there. Place our focus squarely on all of our students, including our EL kids, that deserve the help. But we need to roll up our sleeves, all of us, and take ownership. And that's my answer to it.
Explanation. I think that there were many people in the audience who heard that from you, perhaps for the first time, and agreed with you, because there were many people, I don't think you could see this, were holding up their hands in support of what you were saying. So thank you for explaining it.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank all the families and everybody that came out tonight. I know it's a hardship sometimes, especially when you're bringing your children with you. I just want to summarize for myself, if I can. This is a different proposal tonight than we've seen so far, and this proposal will put $210,000 into an effort to make this change spread out over a year and give us time to prepare.
for this type of change. Is that?
Yeah, I'm viewing this, quite honestly, as the year to design the model without allowing kids to fall through the cracks. And I may come back to you and say we need more support. I just think we have a responsibility to reduce our exposure in the structural deficit. And I'm not making any recommendations here that are going to leave students in the lurch. That's not what I'm proposing here, nor is it my intention. In fact, tomorrow at lunch, we have a working lunch to talk about what our plan is and how we're going to make sure students don't fall through the cracks. And so, yeah, it might be a transition. It may be ongoing. Whatever it takes, in my opinion, to close the achievement gap to make sure all of our kids learn is my priority.
Okay. And if I can follow up. The other question is when we talk about when you're talking about the classroom teacher and being more involved, have we seen a change in the competencies of the classroom teacher over the past few years in terms of being able to work with special population?
You know, I believe that our teachers are doing a fantastic job. They're working their tails off. Our professional development model is working on comprehensive literacy. It's focused on mathematics. It supports our English learners in terms of their language acquisition, in terms of their success. While we're doing that, it's my opinion that part of the TOSA coaching concept is meant to support teachers in their development of strategies, sheltered instruction, observation protocol strategies in their classrooms, where all of our classrooms in the district have a stated expectation where we must have certain things in place for our English learners to be successful. And right now we have not been explicit about it. But it's so critical because some kids can find success academically without certain strategies because they can make meaning. But students with English as a second language, is not their primary language, require a set of strategies in the classroom to acquire understanding. And those are the strategies I'm trying to build in because those are great strategies throughout any classroom environment. And we need to have those in our district.
And I guess I need to be more specific. That was a great answer. But it's my understanding that our staff has gone through at least two specific trainings and that our entire staff has completed those trainings. And those are specifically to bring about those strategies that you were talking. If you could just help me remember.
Please, Rita, will you help me with that?
One shot here and one shot there, and one shot here isn't enough to see true implementation in the classroom. So those teachers who earned their EL authorizations did it in different ways. Some took some of our preparatory classes, that were about 8 of them during the year, and then went and took a test and passed it and earned that EL authorization. Some of them took online courses to earn that authorization. And that's all good. But that's, you know, one shot temporarily. We've put on professional development for our teachers. I did it myself with our teachers in elementary and with our secondary. But again, that was one shot. And what we're trying to do with the instructional coaching model is really to provide that ongoing support. And so I'm going to see that we're going to grow in that area.
Okay, other comments or questions about this item, the budget, from board members? Mr. Quisenberry?
First of all, I want to thank the parents for coming. Gracias a todos para su gerencias, sus comentarios y sus preocupaciones también. I will have to concur with some of what Dr. Prater said. I think one of the big issues that we need to do is get all of our teachers to own all of our students. And I've done this for many, many years as a teacher. And because I was an EL teacher, a lot of times my colleagues would say, now your students are doing this, or your students are not doing that. And the reality is they're all our students. So I think that the part of this proposal that is going to be more inclusive is really, really important.
Other board members? Catherine?
I just want to clarify one thing. So are you talking about just the EL piece of
no,
the budget?
No, this is. Budget? I believe that the item before the board is the superintendent's budget recommendation, and so I'm inviting board members to weigh in on the superintendent's budget recommendation, not just EL.
Okay, then I do have more comments. As I look at the as I look at the overall considerations, the alternative considerations we were given on May 8th. From the Budget Committee, and just sort of to remind those who don't know, these budget recommendations came over a several-month process. They involved members of the community, parents, teachers, administrators, and principals. And we were given a list of four columns of options and of cuts. And the first option was minimum, the second was medium, and the last column that was given to us by the committee was maximum cuts. Everything that appears on the superintendent's list came from column B, the medium cuts, except three categories. And those categories are music, nursing services, and the EL program. The Budget Committee recommendation for music was to cut nothing, from nursing services, and to cut $330,000 from the TOSAs and the EL program. Now, currently stands at $450,000 as a cut, which is, you know, very much closer. There are two proposed cuts to music and nursing, which is $60,000 in each category. So I would like to address some of the comments that we've heard about music and the effect on the music program, both in 1 through 3 in this district, as well as 4 through 6 that was brought up tonight, or K through 12, actually. But specifically in regards to music in 1 through 3, I believe that that item should actually come under professional development, because what we're considering doing is giving back a music program to the classroom teacher, which may be absolutely fine and may be all-inclusive, as Jim was just saying, and I do understand why the principals and the teachers are in favor of it, because it adds a half an hour back to the teaching schedule, which is very beneficial. But I don't think it'll be beneficial if the teachers don't use it. If it's used instead as a sing-along with tapes time, if it's used as a music appreciation only time, unless music literacy and instruction is taught for half an hour a week, we are not doing our job, because this is a core curriculum item and we are required to market the way you would do this. But either to have someone of the quality that I saw in the classroom coaching our teachers to offer this kind of education. Should I speak to nursing at the same time? Okay. Likewise with nursing, I have a concern that I was able to visit the medically fragile class at Slo High today, and on Thursday I visited the Laguna resource classes and the classes we brought in from the coast. And my concern is that these are children with medical conditions that could at any time become very serious, and that unless we have an RN available to take care of those emergencies, we could have tragedy. Secondly, I think just on a practical basis, the number of the caseload for the RNs to write the programs, to write the medical cases, to keep on top of what needs to be done to make these children safe is extraordinary. And I do believe we have, having taken over the obligation from the county to educate these students, we do have an obligation to provide what we promised.
Okay. Thank you. Mrs. Shepherd.
I guess I need a, I have a couple clarifications because maybe I'm not reading a couple of things correctly. I show the budget team recommendation for music to actually be more. They wanted $135,000 cut.
That's their option D.
The budget team recommendation that we were given last time and this time shows the budget team selected to cut $135,000 for music. And we went, Dr. Prater is suggesting a $60,000 cut. So he has decreased. It's my understanding. Am I incorrect?
That's correct.
Okay, so, and in fact, and I, you know, I, of course, I feel these are all very difficult, and but I also have a great deal of respect for the budget team and the work that they did, and would also point out that I would point out a letter that Joyce Hunter, principal at Sinsheimer, sent to us where she diligently spoke with her PTA and with school site council parents at some length who, with, of course, no great enthusiasm, but with a clear vision, stated that they know that cuts must be made and that they appreciate keeping them, preserving of jobs and keeping them, the cuts as far away from classrooms as possible. Now, I do understand that cutting music, making cuts, does affect the classroom. I also appreciate that the from the historical standpoint, the piece about there was an acknowledgement that primary music was something that was not available at one time because we didn't have the funding. We had some extra money when times were good, and we rolled that into providing primary music, and now once again times are not good. I think that I give our primary teachers the credit that they will be able to provide a beneficial and solid music education to our K-3 students. And again, we're not making any changes beyond K-3 right now. I see options as being, you know, increasing class size. I mean, this money has to come. Unfortunately, we have one pot of money, and we can't, we're not a legislative body, we're not Sacramento, we can't say we're going to take money from prisons and put it in education, we're going to change what we do with transportation. We're the end recipients of these dollars, and we have to play the cards we're dealt here, and it's not a pretty hand of cards, but it's what we have. I would also indicate that for nursing services, the budget team did recommend a cut of $60,000. So, I don't know whether we're looking at things differently, but
we are. Let me just clarify one thing. What the budget team gave us was a menu, and the menu that we chose to order from the superintendent's column was column B for the most part. The superintendent's column does not suggest what they put on option D, which was the $1.2 million in class size.
Dr. Rogers, let me take a chance to clarify a couple of things. Number one was the budget project team only gave us, softened the cuts with the idea of transitioning, if you will, or doing something else in the music program specifically. So it's a misunderstanding of the document that you have, I think, that's caused the confusion. True.
$5 million cut, which is what we're aiming for.
True. The totals are very similar. The mix, if you will, of the program cuts are somewhat different within each of those columns. But ultimately, it was 4.7 to 5.2. two?
Right.
In those four columns that you have there? Yeah.
Yes, but so the target is $5 million.
Yeah.
The budget, the FAR column that you're referring to, it goes up to $6.4 million, which we're not aiming for right now. We're at five, right? And so what I'm looking at then is the column before it, which gets us to $4.5 million, which is...
I understand.
Okay, that's where the...
But it was just a spectrum of possible cuts, giving the one that everybody could support, and then the one that not very many people could support, and a couple in the middle that were going to be painful no matter what, but it was just a spectrum.
Right.
Budget project team recommended something different, which happens to be in your board, in the document that has the narrative attached to it also.
Which is more than we need to cut.
It's not more than we need to cut, unless the board says it's more.
But
it's a set of recommendations.
So I'm asking Dr. Oz and Dr. Rogers, I'm asking Ms. Holmes to pull up the document you're referring to up on the screen so we could all look at it. And just for a moment of clarification, I put this in the original packet for the May 8th meeting because I realized that there might be certain things that the board would want to weigh in on, and this provided you with that possibility. But it was just one way of looking at it that I was trying to present.
And while she's looking for it, that is exactly what I was trying to bring us back to. We did not really have the opportunity to discuss this at the May 8th meeting because we went so late, and then we got pushed back into this being our column that we had to choose from. And what I'm suggesting is that, as you just said about EL, we may be going too far. We may have to come back later to revisit some of these. My point, I guess, would be why would we go as far, cutting as far in some of these programs if we don't have to?
So one of the possible considerations in music, and this is one possible way we could still achieve our financial objectives, and that is the current recommendation under music. As I stated in the original document, instead of the $135,000 reduction in music that the budget team recommended, another possibility would be to what I chose to do was take $75,000, and so that's where the 135 minus 75, that's where I got the 60. Okay, so it's a $60,000 savings, but that $75,000 was redirected to support instruments, the things that the music program needs, transportation at the secondary level for music, which they don't have, and it falls squarely on the booster's shoulders, and music, sheet music replacement, as well as instrument replacement. So that $75,000 coming off of the $135,000 wasn't designed in my recommendation to go into people. It instead was meant to go into help support an already very strong program in the 4 through 12 model. Now, what you're bringing to me, though, tonight, so I guess what I'm saying is there is $75,000 to re-examine here, but I hesitate to get into too much of this wiggling around because part of it is the issue is if we have currently two elementary music teachers, if the board adopts this budget, that would leave two elementary music teachers to cover nine school sites to run the 4th through 6th grade program. I don't believe that's going to be a success story. So, but there are other possibilities when you look at the collective whole in our district, a workable solution to that 4th through 6th grade quandary, if you will. But I worry a death by a thousand cuts here. I really do. I don't know what the financial outlook will be for us next year this time. And I really worry about what the conversation will be next year. And people's lives are in the balance. And I try really hard in this recommendation to minimize loss of employment. And I really worry it's safer. What we've learned from other districts that have gone through similar circumstances is they've invested in stuff and not so much in people, because it's very difficult to go through layoffs. And so this proposal represents an acknowledgement of that. How we go about strengthening the 4th through 6th grade model is going to be a little bit of a work of art for us to do it well. It'll involve some flexibility. I want to be completely transparent about this. Is we just haven't had enough time to really examine that part. But I believe the music literacy for professional development is important. Coaching is always important. But that runs head on into our commitments to try and focus on English language development, supporting all learners, that type of quandary that our coaching model is really focused on. So I'm trying to not overload staff either as they're trying to work themselves into a successful model. Does that make sense at all?
It makes sense. I just didn't hear the bottom line. So is the number the same?
So the bottom line is the board can wrestle with my recommendation as is, or they can choose to use the $75,000 in a way that maybe helps us answer those two questions that one of the music teachers, I'm sorry, I'm...
Melanie.
Melanie asked two penetrating questions. One was, how are we going to measure or assess that we're actually teaching to the standards, the music standards, and what evidence will we have that teachers are doing it with fidelity? It's my words, but that's what I heard. And that's a difficult question. I guess I could also apply that to science, social studies. It never stops, because we don't have a long enough school day and we don't have a long enough school year to get to all the standards. And that's a whole nother conversation. But with that said, it's not to minimize the mandate or the expectation, because I think it's an important piece. The question is, how do we go about doing it? So for me, the question is, for the board, is what do you want to do with that $75,000? Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at.
Oh. Well, I'd like to see the amount that is necessary to support a person or two people half-time to continue the 4 through 6 band and choir program, and also do coaching for our teachers as professional development in music. I don't know that I don't know what amount that is. That would be for you to tell us.
So two full-time FTE in addition?
No, that would be one or two half. One full-time. One.
So that's approximately $60,000 to $70,000, and that would be something that would keep us within our budget piece, and that could possibly be the solution.
And that could be.
And really, that's the spirit behind that document that you're referring to. Mm-hmm. That was the spirit behind it, which is on the screen behind you.
Okay. So it would be the amount of an FTE, but not necessarily an FTE. It would be up to the discretion of the administration how to use that.
That's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm hearing. And it's sort of in alignment with the spirit behind the EL model transition,
mm-hmm, exactly.
Where I'm not asking for additional EL specialists necessarily. I'm asking for resources to go to the EL program that allows the team to figure out the best approach to help all kids who have English learner issues.
Okay. Thank you on that.
Well, I missed the last meeting, but I was able to watch the replay, thanks to AGP. And I was struck by a lot of the comments that were made. I've been involved in strategic planning in this district. It's one of the most gut-wrenching experiences I've been through, particularly laying off people who are standing around in the back of the room that you've known for years. And I know that some of the board members here, Chris for sure, and Marilyn, I believe, we basically decided that we're not going through that again, that we are going to preserve our workforce, even where we have to do cuts, because we are a people organization. That's why 87% of our budget is tied up in personnel cost. Our school district doesn't accomplish anything except through our people, teachers, classified, administrators. You know, that's what we do. That is what our business is about. So we survived that, the PG&E bankruptcy, primarily because, and Russell, I thought, did a very cogent review of that history. And we were saved by the dot-com boom and the real estate boom. But we're not going to be saved for the next foreseeable future. There's no magic bullet that's going to come out of Sacramento. I pretty much can guarantee you that. And for every $10,000 we don't cut through these proposals, we'll be cutting that $10,000 and more next year. So this isn't, you know, it's not as bad as the Strategy 14 was, which was basically figuring out who was going to turn off the lights when we shut down teaching. But we are approaching that. Now, the primary role of a board trustee is to provide the vision for the school district. And that vision is a long-term vision because, as we all know, when our child enters in kindergarten, they are likely, like my two sons, to be in our district all the way through high school graduation. It is difficult enough to deal with these fluctuating revenues and try to provide a consistent, coherent educational opportunities for our kids. I was one of the board members who voted to add back in K-3 music and also PE specialist, music specialist. And we did it at a time where we mispredicted our revenues to the low side. It's been a long time since that's happened. And Ed Ballantyne had a tiered approach. And we knew when we added back in those programs that this day was going to come. Now, you see the same sort of thing acted out in Washington, D.C. all the time. We have a sequestration, budget cuts that are supposed to happen automatically. They're already talking about undoing them. So the responsibility of the board member in helping to provide the vision for the district is consistency. We hired Dr. Prater a year and a half ago or so, and we hired him specifically because we wanted a new strategic view for this district. And he has provided that to us. One of the things that I'd been on the board for 10 years by the time we hired him. One of the things that he did that really shook up this organization was he said, hey, yes, we're a good school district, we get good results, but look at Lucia Marr. Look at these other districts and the resources they have. Why are their achievements in certain areas so much better than ours? And what he convinced the board of, that we were... Our programs were good, they could be better. Some of the things we are doing, we needed to do better. We adopted these student initiatives, which was one of the most comprehensive revamping of the vision for this school district that I've been involved in, and I've been involved in so many committees I can't even tell you. And this is our first test of this vision and our superintendent's vision that we face. And frankly, I was a little bit appalled by some of the commentary at the meeting I watched, recording of, partly because so many people seemed surprised that we were cutting. And I'm baffled by that. I told Mr. Grady that I couldn't understand that. I mean, certainly newspaper and television coverage about the state budget woes and cuts to education, you know, are out there. So, and also I was concerned about the conflation, the exaggeration of things. We weren't cutting music. I mean, people were up there talking about us cutting out music out of the lives of children and things. I mean, it's we've got a bad enough problem if we just face the problem without exaggerating it to a greater extent. Personally, I trust Dr. Prater and his administrative team. I believe that these cuts are necessary, his recommendations are necessary, that they were gathered through an intelligent, comprehensive means.
Jim, and then Mark, and Marilyn Murphy.
Well, I want to thank Walter for his excellent summation. I do share some concern about the music, and I have a couple of questions. Okay, we have, is it 5 FTEs at the secondary level?
Yeah, it's. I think it's actually 4.4. We have music teachers that share in choir and band program at Morro Bay High School and Los Osos Middle School, a shared assignment. We have the same thing happening in San Luis Obispo High School and Laguna Middle School, a shared assignment. And we have a part-time guitar teacher also at San Luis Obispo High School.
Okay, so that I needed to get that clarified. The other question is that we will be down to just 2 teachers for the elementary.
Yes.
To cover the coast and in town here. This is a question for Dr. Prater, because he obviously listened to some other presentations we've had about music prior to deciding the budget cuts, and was trying to address some of those concerns about transportation, instrument purchase and repair with the addition of $75,000, or moving that $75,000 into that category. My question, that's a statement now. My question is, prior to that, a lot of the transportation costs were borne by the music boosters at the various sites. And what about instrument purchase and repair? Was that also primarily borne by the boosters, or did we have a small budget for that?
No, excuse me. What the district has done is irregularly allocated $40,000 for purchase of instruments. But the price of instruments, that's not a lot, okay? And also, we annually, for about $10,000 to $15,000, allocate for the refurbishing and repair and cleaning of our currently held instruments.
Thank you. So, just for me, I want to honor the process. I think Walter's right. Mr. Millar is correct on saying that, you know, there has been a process. There has been a lot of input, a lot of consideration, but perhaps that $75,000 might be better spent on some additional periods or time for the elementary music program. And that's just an observation. I have an additional. I share. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' concern about the nurse and the level of service required. But my understanding is that if you see that need, you could respond to that need. If you felt, after further consideration or what have you, we could go with an RN rather than an LVN. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I'm literally doing my best to follow conversations and recommendations that are going on as part of this budget development process. And when it comes to this recommendation, there is a $60,000 savings proposed, but what's tricky about this savings is some of it is projected, assumed, And when you shift to this model, you know, it certainly is up to the board to look at that and ask, well, you know, are there alternatives? And the alternatives could be here that that maybe we need a little more time to vet this out. If we're sticking to the savings, it could be that if we stay with the existing RN model, we just added an LVN recently, maybe that could be part of the recommendation, is that we stick with the RNs that we currently have and re-look at or re-examine the LVN transition. If that's the route we choose to go down, it might be another route. But Jackie Kirk-Martinez expressed some concern over this because there are growing needs, and we need to respond to those needs. So, again, this isn't a perfect document, but it's the best guess that I have right now. If you chose to stay with the RN, and I would suggest then we not have an LVN. And for next year,
if I can, Mr. Miller, it's my understanding going into this that this was the first year of a round of cuts, and that the expectation is that we may have to make a similar amount of cuts, $5 million cuts next year, that this is just the first round?
I think that's an honest and true statement. Given the history of the state of California over the last 5 years and the lack of any clear change in the economics and the direction of the politics of the state, I can only, in my imperfect crystal ball, can only see the future looking like today. And so as we move forward in years, the state of California is not providing us with any solution or any hope. So when we look at our budget, it's important to remember that the base that we're cutting from is a $10 million deficit, a budget that currently exists in this year that has a deficit, a shortfall of revenue over expenses of $10 million. It's structural. It needs to be fixed. If it isn't fixed, then you will have consequences that are beyond comprehension, at least that you want to comprehend. So you're going to be faced with a continual set of debates about what is a basic model of educational programs and how can we afford those. And trust me, this is the easy part. The hard part is when you get into people's jobs. The structure of the budget project team had an overriding goal, which was not to cost jobs. And by far and away, I think we achieved that. It's possible, one or two people, but that plays out with leaves and other things we have no control over at this point. The other aspect of the pain of the future is to actually try and look at other ways to finance our operation. So what we would rely upon today is property taxes. What we need to look at are alternative methods of revenue. And we have many different rods in the fire, if you will, with sticks in the fire. But overall, they aren't going to accomplish a long-term fix to the shortfall that may or may not happen. So the answer to your question is, this is the first year. There definitely will be a second, probably a third year, and ultimately a restructuring of our whole financial model.
Okay. So, again, that's part of why I'm feeling trapped. I did hear you correctly when you did mention that. The other question I have, and this is critical for me to be sure I understand, is there are some districts in the state of California that are building their budgets based on the initiatives that are coming that would increase taxes as if those initiatives were not going to pass. And it's my understanding, if I've got this correctly, that the budget we're looking at and the budget recommendations we're looking at are based on those initiatives passing. And in my mind, and this is the script I've written, but in my mind, the day after those, if those initiatives fail, if the state of California says to heck with public education, if those initiatives fail, then we may be coming back the next day or very soon after and making deeper cuts than this. Is that fair?
I think that's absolutely correct. The budget is recommendations are constructed with the idea that we will not have serious deep cuts from the lack of a passage of an initiative that will produce a sales tax and an income tax sufficient to avoid additional cuts. And if it doesn't pass, then the promise is an additional, and pick a number, it's somewhere between $475 and $425 per student, and our fair share will be in there. That's another $3.5 million. My philosophy, my theory, my approach to this problem is that we'll come back. The board will need to weigh in. I'm thinking the recommendation is that we'll use more of our reserves to bridge through the rest of the year unless there's some obvious choices that we can cut back on. Because at that time, we're going to be into our personnel pieces. We won't be able to lay off 85% of our expenditures. So we have to have a fallback position that doesn't take that into account. And we're fortunate. Absolutely, we're fortunate in the sense that we can afford to bridge through. But all it's going to do is multiply the pain of a budget for 13-14 if the initiative doesn't pass.
Okay. So, again, just to summarize, we would need probably cuts one way or another for structural to make this budget structurally okay.
Are available. The days of having 6% and 9% increases in our revenues are long gone. We can't afford to anticipate those again.
No. Okay. Well, why? Because
she had her line.
No, she didn't.
Oh, okay. Well,
thank you. And she had hers on after me. Thank you. I just want to be clear that we did not build assumptions that initiatives were going to pass and we would have found money, correct?
There is no found money for us. If the initiative doesn't pass, there will be cuts.
Okay.
And we did not build cuts on the basis of the initiative.
Right.
We may have to go back and cut again if it doesn't pass.
But the cuts that are inevitable next year are a result of the $9-point-something million structural deficit. So it's not a question of if we face cuts next year. We're going to face cuts next year. The question of how severe they are.
True.
Jim said something that kind of triggered a comment that I wanted to make, and at first it was a little anxiety-producing, if you can parcel out what's producing your anxiety, to have sort of an open-ended aspect to both the nursing program, the EL program. I've become, over time, less concerned about that because and again, it goes back to the accountability piece. If the approach to nursing that we adopt is not working, or if the approach to EL support is not working, we have the resources to make changes to address those things within the 2012-13 budget, correct? Okay. Now, it will probably be reserve money, right? And for those of you out there who are fans of school finance, one-time money is something that's very dangerous. Reserves are one-time money because if you've got a program going on that has to be fed every year and you've got one-time money, you don't know whether you can feed the program the following year or not. And that's really hard on the employees who are employed by that program. So I guess what I'm looking for is what you and I've already talked about individually is the assurance that if approaches that we adopt are not resulting in supporting students and their success, then we will make the mid-course correction, to use the NASA term, as is necessary, and then figure out what to do the following year. Does that pretty much sum it up? Okay. Thank you. And I'll yield my time to Ms. Schaefer.
Very briefly, I would just remind everyone that as we suffer through this in our district, that for the last 3 weeks or so, Paso Robles has had two has been in school 3 days a week. Think of the impact of students losing 2 days a week of school for a couple of months. That is a terrifying prospect to me and something I do not want to see us face. And I think it is our responsibility to do everything we can to think as far in the future as we can to prevent that happening. That would be a terrible, terrible disservice to our students to be in that position. And to follow up on that, on the back of the sheet we received that is on the back table tonight, you will see the contact information for your legislative representatives. Everyone, all the comments that were made to us here tonight, and which, believe me, we are taking to heart, need to be made at a higher level. So please, if you could take the time to express these concerns that you have for your children and that we share to your legislative representatives who are at that higher level, who are dealing with more pots of money, small though they may be, it's really important that they hear your voice as well. This is how change comes about. So I would urge you to contact your legislative representatives as well.
Thank you. I've listened a lot tonight, and I've heard my fellow board members. This is difficult. These are really hard decisions. But I signed up for this job, and so I'm willing to make them. We've heard, and it's my belief, that our financial picture is not going to improve. Not going to improve next year, not going to improve the following year. And when Mr. Miller says the year after that, possibly a change in our funding model, because we wanted to ensure that if it was returned to the classroom teacher, they would have the tools and experience necessary to provide the instruction. Now we've hit upon a time when we can no longer afford the luxury of the specialists. It's the consensus of principals and primary teachers that this is an area where they can weather the cut. So to my colleague, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, I would say, if you do not make this cut, where do you find the $40,000 that we need to find? Beyond that, I am very concerned about the EL instruction. We have two areas of students enrolled in our district that are at the highest risk of being unsuccessful: our English language learners and our children in poverty. We've made a very direct, concerted effort to reach those groups of students. We want to be successful with them. We want them to be successful students. If the model that we're currently using with the EL specialists and the pullout model is not the most successful model to be pursuing, then we need to change the way we are working with these students so that it can be more successful. If the EL specialists and the pullout deprives those English language learners of valuable classroom time, they're getting the English language instruction, but they're missing the social studies, the science, and the other things that are happening in the regular classroom. I am very willing to look at what people who know much more than myself say would be a better way to reach these students. I don't want to cut funding. I want to improve instruction. So, if what we're talking about here was initially a $300,000 cut to the EL program, but $210,000 has been added back. We're actually looking at $90,000. My question for Dr. Prater is, where do we go from here, in your view, with our EL program? And I understand that this is really a work in progress on everyone's part.
So that's the key. Marilyn, you captured it. And that is the $210,000 back in is my best estimation of being able to provide our Title I schools, where those schools are where the students of greatest need are. And that money will be directed towards those schools. How that looks is part of the next 2 to 3 weeks of me working with our EL specialists, our principals, our directors, and trying to figure out the best way to do it. I feel like I have a strong understanding of what it should be, but I believe this is something that's got to come from the very people that are working with our students and our families. And so I can't answer it directly other than it'll be a strong process that I'm going to have to work really fast on before the school year gets out to come up with the best plan. But I need to know how many dollars I'm working with. And if I've come up with a conclusion by midsummer that we need a little more horses under the hood, I will come back to you. But I'm of the opinion that this should suffice, that we should be able to get where we need to go with these resources.
Okay, so thank you. And can I assume from what you said that there is nothing about this cut that is proposed that should be interpreted as lessening our commitment to our English language learners and to closing the achievement gap?
Ironically, I'm saying to you that this, I believe, will strengthen our support for our English learners, not hinder it.
I believe that is what you're saying.
That is what I'm saying.
And I want to say it out loud.
But I also want everyone to know that when you look at our TOSA model that we're trying to develop, that's also part of contributing to improved instruction and having the important conversation of owning all of our students, that it's not enough to say, oh, those are your students. No, they're ours.
It costs more money. We have to be committed to fully serving these students. Now, if our best information is that we can fully serve the needs of our special education students, all of our students, but certainly our special ed students and our medically fragile students, which are of great concern, if you're saying that we can cut an RN, add an LVN, and provide everything that the students need under their IEPs, and that you would just morally provide to them because it's the right thing to do, then I'm willing to accept this cut with the proviso that if at any point in time we find that we are spread so thin or stretched to where we cannot provide top-notch service, that we will take immediate action at the district level to make whatever changes are necessary so that we are providing those services. And those are my comments, and I'm prepared to support the recommendations.
Okay, and I'm going to take my turn now. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for engaging in this. Some of my comments are going to be for the public because I think the board already knows them, but I think it's important to reiterate them for the public. The first thing is that the old adage is that Sacramento gives and we have to take away. And that's exactly what we're seeing tonight and what we and many other, actually every other school district in California has seen. They gave us money. They told us we had to use it in certain ways. And now that they've taken it back, we're the ones that are responsible for facing the public and making the cuts. And I squarely hold Sacramento and our local legislators responsible for that. That's the first thing. The second thing is that, in my opinion, this is a numbers game. As everybody said tonight, and we all know, we're facing at least a $4.5 million budget cut. That's something we've got to do. It's not going to get better next year. It is a strictly numbers game for me. And as I sit and listen to news, and yes, I admit that I'm an NPR listener, and I hear what they do in Sacramento, and I hear what they do in Washington, D.C., and when I hear that, you know, we're going to kick the can down the road, we're not going to kick the can down the road. We can't kick the can down the road. We have to act. If we've set a target and we know how much we've got to cut, we know what we've got to do, and we know we've got to find the money somewhere. That's the next thing. I think it's instructive to throw out some other numbers. I'm going to put out the number 12. The number 12 is the most recent number of districts that have gone negative in California out of about 1,000 districts, including Paso Robles. Negative means that they're unable to meet their financial obligations possibly through the next year. The next number I want to throw out is 180, and actually it's a little bit more than 180. Those are the districts which are qualified, which means that they may not make their budget for the next 2 years. Included in those qualified districts, qualified is not a good thing in this case, are Atascadero, Lucia Mar, Chandon, and San Miguel, all here in San Luis Obispo County. Paso Robles is negative. That means that half of our school districts in this county are under financial distress. Another figure I want to throw out there is 168. And my job as a special education director, today we were looking at school calendars and trying to figure out how we were going to provide services to North County students. 168 is the number of school days that Paso Robles is proposing to educate students next year. Not 180, 168. And finally, the number I want everybody to focus on, and Walter and I were looking at each other, is $20 million. Because it's $20 million that we're going to lose if we lose basic aid and we have to go down to revenue limit. I think that's a pretty accurate figure, is it not, Russell?
Yeah.
So we've got those figures, and those are some things that we need to concentrate on. I was very concerned about the original EL cut, and I'm happy to see that $210,000 has been added back. And your promise to us that if it's not working, that you will add more to that. Because I look out here, and I look at the people that came tonight, and I look at them as a representation of our students, and I know that the achievement gap exists. We all know that the achievement gap exists, and we've got to do something about that. We know we're going to have the data. That's one of our initiatives. We're going to know what's working and what's not working. And if it's not working, we're going to have to figure out what is working, because we're being held accountable for that. I would love to see more there. I appreciate your adding that. What we've done, though, is we've placed registered nurses in our classrooms. And when I say that that can be revenue neutral, I believe it can be as close to revenue neutral as possible, because they can get at least double the amount of Medi-Cal reimbursements that an LVN can get. Plus, they can do things like assessment, which is extremely important for our students, which an LVN cannot do. An LVN can only act under the supervision of a school nurse or a registered nurse or a doctor, which means that every time something goes wrong in a classroom where there's an LVN, that LVN's got to make that phone call if it's not specifically on the doctor's orders. And again, an LVN makes about half of the Medi-Cal reimbursement. I'm not proposing another certificated school nurse, because that's where the $60,000 comes in, thinking about not understanding where the Medi-Cal reimbursements would be. So I would propose that we look at the same system that the county office is doing, and that's that we have a three-tiered program. We have LVNs. We have registered nurses. We've got a fine nursing program at Cuesta College. I think we can find that nurses are available. In fact, we found that registered nurses were more available than LVNs. and then we have certificated school nurses. And I think if we were to look at that, I don't think the revenues would, I don't think the costs would be affected. The last thing I'm going to speak about is the music. Actually, there's two other things. The music, I do not believe that we can run any kind of an elementary school music program, nine schools with two teachers. I don't think it can happen. I would support Dr. Prater's comments tonight about shifting some of that money that we were proposing to send to secondary and to the elementary school campuses and replace the retiring primary, the retiring elementary school music teacher, so that instead of two for covering nine, we would have three elementary school music teachers. I absolutely do not think that we can make it work, even four through sixth. Going, you know, basically we're talking about people trying to get to five, four schools every week. And I think that that would be a cost-neutral thing. And then the last thing is, when Mr. Ned and I kind of just touched base, and Mrs. Capilano and I did as well, and they pointed out to me that there was an association meeting this evening, and the discussion was about special education. As you all know, my wife is a special educator, and so I have a place in my heart for this. That said, we're going to pay for special ed one way or the other. I think it will be instructive for us to have a FICMAT review of our services. And if we can reduce the cost of our services without reducing service to our students and without adding additional stress to our teachers, I say fine. Because we're going to have to pay for it one way or the other. And it's an encroachment into our general fund. But I want to just point that out, that I hope that we're not just talking about $200,000+ without some reform here that's going to help our teachers and help our students. And I think going along with that, I am sensitive to the association's concern and the concerns that teachers have about the need for support for special education students. That said, I'm not going to, it's typically not my place to make a motion. I'm not going to make a motion. But I would support the recommendations at the level we're talking about if we could figure out a way to look at the RNs versus the LVNs, if we could take the money that was proposed for the shift from the music to provide another elementary school music teacher. And I appreciate the additional $210,000 over the original recommendation for the EL. Thank you.
I will make that motion that Chris just described, which would be to accept this budget proposal from the superintendent with the three suggestions that Chris made regarding the music program, regarding the RN, and also regarding the resource support.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion, Mr. Malone?
I don't understand a motion to accept the recommendation with, well, I can't remember the term you used.
I mean, for the music was making it cost neutral by shifting some of the funds that were proposed for other things into, instead of putting it for things, adding one additional music person. I just wanted to clarify that. And also, I'm not proposing any change in the special education allocation. That was not my suggestion.
Okay, I amend my my motion to reflect those two changes that Chris mentioned.
Would you accept that as a?
I would accept it, and I would accept it based on, and it's my sense that in the changing of the LVN to the RN, there's the strong likelihood that we would increase our income through the services of the RN and their ability to to make recommendations that would affect our recovery of money from the MA program. And I'm also accepting the proposed changes based on the fact that the $60,000 is available to make the changes to the music program, so that again is cost neutral.
Is that a second?
Thank you, Walter. I appreciate your working with me on this. So those are the reasons why I am seconding this motion.
It's
cost neutral.
What happened was that Catherine amended her motion, and so Mark needed to agree with that. So we have a motion on the floor to accept the recommendation with the following: that the LVN not be the RN not be replaced by an LVN. My recommendation was to have it a classified position. That was, I'm just telling you what my vision was, and that the cost of the music educator be cost neutral with your proposal. Okay, can you explain what you were talking about there, Eric? Because Walter, we need to make that clear. It needs to be clarified.
Yeah, I have my own clarification because I think I understand what you're saying. I just want to be real clear. The difficulty that was raised is two elementary music teachers covering nine elementary schools is a very difficult proposition. We could probably patch it together. It's certainly not going to be as strong as it is now in the four through six program. Not the primary. I have to be real clear about this. What I'm hearing in your proposal, Chris, is that we, instead of the $75,000 or so going to transportation at the secondary level, music, sheet music increases in budget, and instrument replacement, we take that money and we redirect it to one additional elementary music teacher who then would represent the third elementary teacher who then would be able to do the fourth through sixth grade model with the or a combination of something that might include something that we haven't thought of yet, but with the premise being that that person supports the elementary music model. Now, again, I would have to work with the staff, the music program people, and principals to figure out what that could look like to support those objectives. I'm not hearing you say that is meant to maintain a 1-3 program. That's not what I'm hearing, but that's why I have to clarify.
You summarized what my belief is exactly.
In terms of the LVN RN, what I heard you say was we should spend some time examining a different kind of model that includes LVN classified RN and certificated school nurses as a continuum of support. But in the meantime, you would support, instead of an RN and take away an RN, take away the RN and put in take away the LVN and put in the RN for the year. That's what I'm hearing you say.
So that's going to change.
Yes, that was my thinking.
And that cost differential is about $20,000.
And I think that we need to analyze that in light of the Medi-Cal reimbursements, the difference in Medi-Cal reimbursement between an RN and an LVN.
Understood.
Thank you.
So with the music, so basically what we're going to do is...
This proposal would be a compromise to that.
Yeah, I'd like to call for the question. I think... Well, I agree with the revised revisions to the proposed budget, as stated by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and by Mr. Buckman.
Okay. Mr. Quisenberry has called for the question. That requires two-thirds vote of the board in order to close this discussion. That doesn't need a motion or anything like that. So there is a motion to end debate on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, it's three. The motion fails. Is there anybody else who has comments on this? Mr. Millar.
I'll move the superintendent's budget recommendation.
Okay, we already have a motion on the floor. So we'll have to take a vote on that. Do we have a second? Well, actually, no, what we voted on was the cloture of the, I'm sorry.
I'll vote yes on that.
Okay. So let's try that again. Mr. Quisenberry has requested that we call the question, which requires a two-thirds vote of the board in order to close the discussion.
Why don't you try to take it again? I'll vote for it.
Okay. So we now have four people who voted for that. So the question is closed. We'll bring it immediately to a vote. So we have a motion. Mrs. Holmes, are you clear on the motion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. Motion carries 4-3. Okay. Let's move on to the consent agenda. Please let me know if you have anything that you'd like to bring forward. And that would be certificated new contract employment 2012-2013, approval of class of certificated and classified personnel items, disposition of surplus property, acceptance of donations, approval of purchase orders, and approval of CASI waivers. Would somebody like to make a motion on that?
I move approval of the consent items 10.01, 10.02, 10.03, 10.04, and 10.05.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on these items? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Advanced agenda?
Yes, I have one advanced agenda item I'd like to propose, and it's unfortunately along the budget lines. I've refrained tonight from trying to talk about enhancements to the adult ed program and enhancements to the energy and recycling programs. What I'd rather do is since I'm working off the seat of my pants on those, is ask, and seeing that the agenda is somewhat fluid, ask that staff come back with a report, or that we have an agenda item that looks at the opportunity and gets a chance to gather some data on energy and recycling and its impact on the district or other districts, and discussion with other districts regarding adult education models that the board can look at and decide if we can capture some revenue further down in this year.
I also have an interest in that too.
Okay. Is that an interest to make it an agenda item or to bring it back as a Friday note initially?
I'm fine with a Friday response.
Okay.
Rather than an agenda item.
Is that something that you can do, Dr. Prater? Not immediately.
Okay.
But
yeah, I. Okay. Yeah. These are really busy times. So yeah, I can put some information together in the next few weeks. I see this as a possible summer retreat or item or special session. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for advanced agenda? Any reports by board members? Mr. Quisenberry.
Just briefly, there was a meeting of a support group, parent support group, through under the auspices of parent participation, and I wanted to mention that Rita Delkiskamp was there, and